HouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Radio. HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141. HUR Voices, Washington.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to The Traveling Culturati, exploring the style and culture of travel with travel pro Javon Harley, exclusively on HUR Voices.
Well, hello there, fellow Culturati. Javon Harley here, your host and travel pro for Traveling Culturati. Today, we're revisiting Ghana with some of our trip details and experiences. We've also got Javon's Travel Minute, the question of the week, and the culture report. But right now, I've got some travel news. When Tamika Cross, a fourth-year OBGYN resident, heard a cry for help on her Delta flight, she sprung into action, only to have the flight attendant dismiss her attempts to help multiple times. When she finally got the attendant's attention, she allegedly said, "Oh, wow, you're an actual physician." She then asked to see Cross's credentials. "I'm an OBGYN working in Houston, in Detroit, for a wedding. But believe it or not, they do have doctors in Detroit. Now excuse me so I can help the man in need," Cross responded. Then a white man stepped in to help. Cross said the attendant claimed she saw the man's credentials and didn't need Cross's assistance. Mind you, he hasn't shown anything to her, just showed up and fit the description of a doctor, Cross wrote on her Facebook. When the attendant asked for Cross's help minutes later, she jumped in to examine the man. "She needed my help, and I continued to help despite the choice words I had saved up for her," Cross wrote. "The patient and his wife weren't the problem. They needed help, and we were mid-flight." The attendant apologized to Cross and offered her Delta Sky Miles, but she declined. She decided to report the incident instead. "I don't want Sky Miles in exchange for blatant discrimination. Whether this was race, age, gender discrimination, it's not right," Cross wrote. Well, there's some new security lines to speed things up just a little bit at Los Angeles International Airport. First, it was Delta at Atlanta's Hartsfield International Airport. Now, Los Angeles International Airport will hopefully get past the gridlock with Innovation Lanes, a system that uses multiple conveyor belts to allow up to 5 passengers to simultaneously unload bags, shoes, and clothes into the bins to be screened by TSA. The system that will start with 2 of these innovation lanes that are designed to speed security screening by up to 30%. The 2 innovation lanes are replacing regular screening lanes used for United passengers. The system works because the multiple conveyor belts eliminate bottlenecks caused by travelers who are slow to unload their bags and personal items. Other passengers using the lane at the same time can simply slide their bins under the slower traveler. In addition, the new system allows an unlimited number of bins because 1 conveyor belt is dedicated to rolling empty bins to passengers in the screening line. The 2 lanes will be the first of at least 9 additional innovation lanes expected to be installed at LAX by the end of next year at various terminals. This is according to airport officials. United is working with TSA to install innovation lanes at Newark Liberty International Airport in New Jersey this fall and Chicago O'Hare International Airport later this year. Now, let's see what they can do to get us to the airport any faster. Airlines are suffering from more disruptive passengers than ever before. Last year, airlines reported more than 10,800 incidents involving an unruly passenger. The result is a more than 1,000 incident increase over the previous year, and reports the International Air Transport Association, or about 1 incident for every 1,205 flights. The most typical incident involves verbal abuse on the part of the passenger or an unlawful failure to follow crew instructions. About 11% include physical aggression toward fellow passengers, the crew, or the aircraft itself. In 23% of the cases, drugs or alcohol play a role. However, generally, the alcohol or drugs were consumed before before boarding and were not provided by the crew. Unruly and disruptive behavior is simply not acceptable. The antisocial behavior of a tiny minority of customers can have unpleasant consequences for the safety and comfort of all on board. The increase in reported incidents tells us that more effective deterrents are needed. Airlines and airports are guided by core principles developed in 2014 to help prevent and manage such incidents, said the Director General and CEO of IATA. Airlines have set standards for handling unruly passengers with a focus on more efficient prevention and incident management. Some have additionally focused on the role alcohol plays with an effort to prevent excessive drinking and intoxication prior to boarding. A call is made for many airport bars and duty-free shops to more carefully serve alcohol and avoid any encouragement of heavy drinking before flight. There's no easy answer to stem the rise in reported unruly behavior. We need a balanced solution in which all stakeholders can collaborate. The industry's core principles can help to manage the small percentage of passengers who abuse alcohol. And it must be balanced with efforts by governments taking advantage of all their deterrence mechanisms. Have you experienced disruptive behavior from a passenger on a flight? Let me hear from you with your story. Well, if you ever wanted to know which cities have the best access to public transportation, I have them for you right here. There's a new study by the Institute of Transportation and Development found that Paris is the city with the most accessible public transportation. Their study looked at the number of residents who live a short walking distance to rapid transit across 26 major cities and their greater metro regions, calculating the number of residents who live within 1 kilometer or about 10 to 15 minutes walking from high quality rapid transit options. In Paris, 100% of residents live within 1 kilometer from public transportation. Probably why they're at the top of the list. Here's the rest of the list with two from the U.S. Barcelona, Spain, Madrid, Spain, London, England, Rotterdam, Netherlands, Seoul, Korea, New York City, Buenos Aires, Boston, Massachusetts, and Beijing, China. So visit these cities and you can leave the car at home. Have you ever wanted to see the inside of a celebrity home? Well, if you did not make it on the VIP list, there's still a way. Some celebrities have transformed their homes into museums, while others are even available to stay in. And here's some of the best. Prince, of course. He was certainly known while he was alive for opening up his home in Paisley Park for parties, dancing, and general celebration. And as we've reported before, now fans can visit the Minnesota complex for a tour of the private estate and recording studios of the legendary singer. And tickets are available from $38.50. Many make the rock and roll pilgrimage to Memphis, Tennessee, and to Graceland, the home of Elvis Presley. It's where fans go to revel in his over-the-top lifestyle and celebrate his legacy. Those tickets start at $38.75. And search for Satchmo, tucked away in Queens, New York, is the home of one of jazz's most important figures, Louis Armstrong. The home where he lived for nearly 30 years is a museum that stores an archive of recordings, photographs, and memorabilia, partly preserved by his wife, Lucille, plus furnishings that have barely been touched. Admission there is only $10. And you can actually stay in celebrity homes, and you can book it through Airbnb. From Elizabeth Taylor to Liberace, former homes for celebrities are available. So you too can sleep where Denzel Washington once slept. TripAdvisor, one of the world's largest travel websites, will no longer sell tickets to hundreds of attractions where travelers come into contact with wild animals or endangered species held in captivity. The attractions include animal rides, swimming with the dolphin experiences, and the petting of endangered species like tigers. The decision came after roughly 6 months of research and consultation with animal groups like People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or better known as PETA, Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Global Wildlife Conservation, and others. TripAdvisor is a leader in the industry, and we understand and applaud that this is a precedent-setting move. A corporate liaison for PETA, Stephanie Shaw, said PETA and other animal welfare groups say dolphins and elephants held in captivity for entertainment purposes can suffer severe physical and psychological damage. TripAdvisor will also create a wildlife tourism education portal in partnership with leading animal protection organizations that will inform the site's users who review attractions and general visitors about animal welfare issues. We believe the end result of our efforts will be enabling travelers to make more thoughtful choices about whether to visit an animal attraction and to write more meaningful reviews about those attractions. TripAdvisor's chief executive and co-founder Stephanie Coffer said in a statement, TripAdvisor will stop selling tickets to some attractions immediately, but the totality of the booking policy changes, as well as the educational portal, will not be completely implemented until early 2017. There are plenty of weird things that people are afraid of in this world. If flying is one of them, you're definitely not alone. In fact, one of three Americans is anxious about flying on planes. And while that's not necessarily rational, considering flying is one of the safest modes of travel, and you're more likely to be struck by lightning than a commercial plane accident. There are plenty of airplane facts that contribute to this widespread cultural anxiety. Here's a list of some unsettling facts about flying that you might not want to know if you're among the third of U.S. citizens who are uncomfortable on a plane to begin with. Lots of planes get struck by lightning, but don't panic. Planes are built to take it. The scariest thing that you'll experience if lightning strikes while you're on board is probably just a bright flash and a loud boom. Experts estimate that each U.S. commercial fleet is struck by lightning at least once annually. I've certainly been on one that has been struck by lightning. It is startling, but it's safe all the same. As I said, they're built to take it. Afternoon flights are the worst for turbulence. So if you're prone to motion sickness, you may want to avoid afternoon flights. Because of the increased likelihood of a thunderstorm occurring, as well as the bumpy afternoon air, the later the day gets, the more likely you are to hit turbulence. As the night cools off, the air in the late night and early morning becomes more level. Perfect timing for a nice snooze. Additionally, wind speeds are generally lower at these times, making for a smooth red eye. There's something pilots fear much more than turbulence. Turbulence is a common occurrence on flights. Pilots can plan for it, see when it's coming, and simply get used to the idea that its presence almost never implies danger. That being said, an updraft is completely a different story. Not only can a flight team not necessarily detect an updraft on a nighttime radar, but hitting these violent winds at a plane's high speed can make for the plane being thrown up and down in the air quite roughly. This can damage the body of the plane and subsequently spin it out of control. We avoid turbulence not because we are afraid the wing is going to fall off, says the pilot, but because it's annoying. Planes often just carry enough fuel to get through their scheduled trip. And since carrying extra fuel may lead to an unnecessary waste of that resource, lots of major airlines play it safe and schedule their flights to fly without full tanks of gas. This is, of course, far from a death sentence, considering that planes can often land at an alternate airport if need be. That being said, not exactly comforting. And lastly, there's no such thing as a water landing. The phrase water landing is nothing more than a euphemism for crashing into the ocean. It can oftentimes be a controlled descent as opposed to a deadly crash. But except for Scully and the miracle on the Hudson, there are generally no other cases where a U.S. plane has landed in or on water, if not for an emergency situation. Well, that's all I've got for travel news, and when I come back, I've got Javon's Travel Minute, our trip to Ghana, and the question of the week. What do you know about Yellowstone Park? I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati, exclusively on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.
Hey, what up, world? This is Sway from Eminem's J45. Every weekday morning, we serve up the revolving door of celebrities. Like Kim Kardashian.
It's like, you know, like...
Kevin Hart.
Sway's show is a big media hit.
Jennifer Lopez.
Leave it to Sway.
Yep.
You know what you're doing. That's why you Sway.
Mike Tyson is here.
Sway got the voice. Your voice influences people.
Sway in the morning. Weekdays from 8 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern on Eminem's J45.
Channel 45 and on the SiriusXM app.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a wounded warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
I'm Daisha Smith.
And I'm Christina Spicer.
And we are your hosts of Internal Affairs,
where you get a window into the minds of college students.
On Fridays at 11 a.m., we'll be giving you a taste of what the college experience is really about.
What they don't show you in the brochure and tell you on the campus tour.
From the trials to the triumphs, Internal Affairs have you covered.
Be sure to tune in to HUR Voices every week for intriguing discussions.
Produced by Howard University student-run radio station WHBC.
For SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices.
HUR Voices invites you to join us for a special presentation of In Between the Lines, Friday, October 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We're exploring what it means to be multicultural in the American society. For more information, follow us on Twitter at @HUR_voices or like us on Facebook. It's another special presentation of the Howard University Radio Network.
If you'd like to stay connected, this is your personal invitation to join me tonight. Hi, I'm Lorna Newton. The connection's on from 8 till midnight, and the only thing missing is you. We've got all the music you love to hear, you love to relax to, you love to tap your toes to. We'll do it all just for you. The connection, right here on HUR Voices on SiriusXM. That's 8 o'clock tonight, Eastern Standard Time. Bring a friend along.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Traveling Culturati is all about the style and culture of travel. Head on over to the website and check it out, travelingculturati.com.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
Long layovers at an airport can be uncomfortable and expensive if you're flying economy. And if you're flying economy, the flight itself is uncomfortable enough. So how do you make your experience more comfortable and possibly less expensive? The lounge. Now, while you may be thinking it's off limits or only for premium travelers, think again. Now, I'm not saying it's free, but when you consider the cost of gaining access versus paying for a meal and a few drinks, the lounge just might be less expensive or even free. You have several options if you're not flying business or first class or are a premium flyer. Look to your credit cards. Some cards have lounge access agreements. Others, like American Express, have their own lounges for Platinum and Centurion cardholders. They also have Priority Pass for those airports where they don't have lounges. Yes, there's an app for that too, Lounge Buddy. It gives you access to hundreds of lounges around the world. Yes, it's for a fee, but think about what you get inside the lounge. Complimentary food and drinks, Wi-Fi, comfortable seats, television, charging stations, cleaner bathrooms, and some other amenities like showers and massages. And did I say comfortable seats? Yeah, I'm going to say that again. So believe me, it's worth it. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute.
Amen!
That's a call and response in the Ghanaian language, which means listen. And the response is, I am. The trip to Ghana was a special and personal one because of its connection and history with the African-American slave trade. We started our trip in Accra and stayed at the Labadi Beach Resort. And, of course, we visited the W.E.B. Du Bois Center for Pan-African Culture, Independence Square, and Kwame Nkrumah Memorial Park in Accra. W.E.B. Du Bois is widely recognized as a significant figure for his pursuit of social justice and his literary relevance. He was an activist. He challenged the oppression in the society which he lived in. He was a controversial figure because of his stance on the political and economic issues of his day, as well as his immigration to Ghana. Independence Square was commissioned by Kwame Nkrumah to honor the visit of Queen Elizabeth II. Construction ended in 1961, and it was christened Black Star Square. The square boasts two monuments, the Independence Arch and the Black Star Monument, also known as the Black Star Gate. And there is a memorial for fallen soldiers facing the Independence Arch. Kwame Nkrumah Memorial Park was erected in memory of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, Ghana's first president and one of its founding fathers. It was built on a former British polo field, and it was the point where Nkrumah declared independence in 1957. The park consists of 5 acres of land and holds a museum tracing Nkrumah's life. There are many personal items on display in the museum, but the centerpiece is the mausoleum, Nkrumah and his wife's final resting place. On our way to Elmina and Cape Coast, we stopped to have lunch. We're in Elmina, and we have the wonderful opportunity to dine at this oceanside restaurant that is called Mabel's Table. And it is owned by an African-American, someone who's come all the way from the United States who has taken up residency here in Ghana. And I'm talking to Robbie Kohane Halevi. Welcome to the Traveling Culturati.
Oh, thank you very much.
So tell me, how long have you been here in Ghana?
I've been here living as my address in my home in Ghana for 22 years.
What brought you here?
Well, I like to think destiny brought me here. I came here 30 years ago for the first time and brought a group here with me on a pilgrimage, finding our roots. And when I came here, I fell in love with this place. And of course, I couldn't move just on the emotions of that experience, but I charted my course and planned my way. And after 7 years of traveling back and forth and 13 trips, I decided to move here as my permanent residence and take up business here and fulfill my spiritual journey and returning back home to Mother Ghana.
And it is a beautiful area where we are now. Exactly where are we? And tell us about the location of your establishment.
We are in Itri, Elmina. This is the first village you come into leaving Cape Coast when you enter into Elmina. And I like to answer that question where we are exactly. We are in the center of the earth. We are 0 degree longitude and 0 degree latitude. And we're in the center of the earth. This is where we tell time from. We're between the Cape Coast and the Elmina Castle. And these are the two historical castles where millions of Africans were torn away from the African continent. And we sit in the middle of that. So we're actually in Itri, Elmina. The ancient name is Edina, but they call it Elmina because it means the mines, because when the Europeans came here, they found gold all on this coast, and that's how it got its former name, the Gold Coast. So we're in Elmina, which means the mines.
And I'm going to get back to some of that history because it's such a personal part of history for myself, for any African American, really. But I do want to talk about your establishment because we've just finished lunch here and everyone has gone back for seconds and thirds. We're a little full and it's mama's cooking back there. So tell us a little bit about establishing the restaurant here and the cuisine that you have.
Yes, well, as fortunately, my wife, Mabel, whom the restaurant is named after, she is the main cook here and chef, and she is the one that lays out these meals and does these wonderful meals. We have established it now. This is about our 13th year. She's a caterer. and she has mixed up the indigenous cuisine here from Mother Africa as well as with the African-American cuisine with our nice spices and, you know, our fried chickens, our grilled chicken and our greens and all of that, along with the palava sauces and the grilled tilapia and banku. So we have a mixture of the African spice, both from the African continent, Ghana here, as well as from some of the spices that we are familiar with in the diaspora in the United States of America.
What about that really hot and spicy one, that brown one?
Yeah, we call that the red. You know, that is a, you know, in the States we say rice and beans, but it has a nice spice with tomato sauce and peppers. And, you know, here in Africa, we love spice. And pepper, especially cayenne pepper, plays a major role in almost all of our cuisines and sauces here.
Well, I have to say that at home, my sister is the queen of potato salad, but I think she may have been dethroned today.
Well, I have, you know, I had the pleasure of having my father here, you know, who spent the last 7 years of his life here with me. And he's from North Carolina, and he brought some of that southern touch. And he and my wife got together, and they teamed up, and they put together this potato salad. She carries on that tradition of that potato salad. She does it very well. And it's a catcher. Everyone that comes here, they love her potato salad.
Well, I concur. Now, you're here in this beautiful setting, and you have a view of the Elmina Castle or Elmina Fort. How is that?
Well, you know, it's a constant reminder, basically, you know, of the history that belongs to our people. You know, I do tours there. You know, I bring, you know, brothers and sisters from the diaspora there. And people ask me that question, how do you live? What do you feel looking at that dungeon and that fort every day? And I say, you know, we should never forget. It is not a source of pain per se, because I move beyond that to a source of inspiration of how resilient our people are and how we've been blessed by the Creator to have come through something like that and still be able to move on and to ascend above that and to be a people of resilience, to be a people of fortitude, and to be a people of strength. And so I get strength from that, knowing that that's where our people have come through, and yet we have survived and still we rise.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you again for having us here. It has been an honor and a pleasure to have that connection with you as an African American and to be sitting here and looking at the place that we will soon be visiting. And as you said, it is a powerful place, and it has such a historic relevance to it. And no, it's not a sad place, but it is a place where you can gain some strength, because we know where we've come from and we know where we are now and we know where we need to go as well. So thank you again for having us, and thank you for a wonderful meal.
Oh, thank you very much, and it's very good hosting you and receiving you. And I've enjoyed this interview with you, enjoyed meeting you most of all.
Well, thank you. And I'm telling you, when you come to Elmina, you have to stop at Mabel's and have to have the potato salad. Everything is wonderful, but especially the potato salad.
We then hit the road for Elmina to visit the forts of Elmina and Cape Coast and the history of the transatlantic slave trade. This is especially personal for an African American, as some of us can trace our roots to this very place. The Cape Coast Castle and Fort was built by the Swedes in 1653 and was later taken over by the British. This castle also houses the West African Historical Museum, established by the Smithsonian Institute in collaboration with the Ghanaian government in 1994. The Elmina Castle was built by the Portuguese in 1482 and is also known as St. George's Castle. The castle was the first European structure built in sub-Saharan Africa. Both are places where the slave trade was active, with inhumane facilities and activities of human trafficking. Touring the castles and the forts is surreal, as I imagine the many people who were chained, shackled, raped, put on public display, and auctioned off to the highest bidder. Walking through the hallways, the chambers, and climbing down into the dungeons where human beings were treated like animals, hoarded and kept in vile conditions until they boarded ships and met their fate as a slave. They would leave their homeland and never return. You could feel their uncertainty, their confusion, their desperation, and in some cases, hopelessness. From the dark dungeons, they would ascend to the courtyard, through the corridors, and then through a large wooden door at the Cape Coast Castle and a small narrow opening at the Elmina Castle, each leading to ships that would take them across the Atlantic Ocean to the Americas, where an ill-fated life would await those who survived the transatlantic crossing. This is called the Door of No Return, and walking through it is an indescribable feeling. You really don't know what to feel, but it is kind of eerie. Again, imagining what it was like then and what those individuals must have been thinking. For the first ones, I'm sure it was total confusion. And the later ones, maybe they had heard of what being captured meant, but still having no idea what was truly in store for them. When you walk through, you're met with a bustling fishing port, with hundreds of boats and even more fishermen and other people who are buying and selling fish. In fact, the city just outside the forts is extremely busy and matches the mindset of that history. 20 miles north of Cape Coast and Elmina is Kakum National Park. Its main attraction is the Canopy Walkway with over 7 bridges, 6 platforms, and treetops at 100 feet high. Kakum National Park is home to 7 primate species, including the Diana monkey, more than 500 species of butterflies, and about 250 species of birds, including the 5 hornbill species, the Fraser eagle owl, and the African gray and Senegal parrots. The most notable endangered species of fauna in the park are the Diana monkeys, giant bongo antelope, yellow-backed duikers, and African elephant. We started with our guide on a nature walk and climbed to the first canopy. It is here that you walk from one canopy to the other, but after the third canopy, you can turn around if you're not feeling up to the full canopy walk.
I am in the Kakum National Park, and with me is William Yeboah,
yeah.
Who is the park guide. William, where are we exactly?
We're on the first bridge, and where we are now, from where we are now to our ground is 80 meters.
80 meters below?
Yes.
Okay. Below. And how many canopy walkways are there again?
There are 7 bridges.
And
with 6 platforms.
6 platforms, 7 bridges. And how long is this one that we're on?
23 meters.
This one is 23 meters. This is the first of 7. And the longest one is where?
It's the third one.
The third one.
About 60 meters.
60 meters.
Yeah.
Okay. And how secure is this canopy?
I would say 100% secured.
100%.
Yeah, because every 6 months, we do maintenance.
Okay.
Between the bridges, the ropes, the boards, everything.
And how much weight can it take?
8 tons.
8 tons,
yes.
It can take.
Yes.
So they say at least, what, 2 elephants?
2 elephants.
2 elephants,
yes.
Can stand on the canopy and bridge at the same time.
Point.
So I think we're good. We have some other folks that are taking the adventure and the walk and the canopy walkways with us. So we'll see you after we do number 7.
Okay.
It is absolutely breathtaking to be high among the trees, suspended on these canopies that move and sway and are connected with cable rope. On our way down from the canopies, our guide William gave us some information on the forest.
We have found this tree that is very important in the Ghanaian culture. William, tell us about the tree.
Yeah, that is Issa. You know, in Ghana, our popular food in Ghana is fufu. And fufu is a combination of cassava and plantain. You mix them, you pound, you get fufu. And this is what we use for the pounding of the fufu. We call it the pistol or the pounding stick. Also, in the olden days, the Issa trees were also used as chewing sticks because at first we're not having toothbrush in Ghana. We use our traditional brush, which are made from the Issa tree. And even still in Ghana, people still use them.
What does it taste like?
It tastes very good. I would say it is nice.
Mint?
It doesn't taste bitter.
No.
It
tastes,
yeah, it has a very nice taste.
Now, are these roots?
These are buckrush roots. These are the roots. Because most of the Issa trees, they don't have tap roots. So they only grow with buckrushes that support them in case it's raining or the rain is blowing.
So they've been used for shelter as well?
Yeah. In the olden days also, was used as houses. Yes. Most of the Issa trees the big ones, they have big buttresses. So you cover the top with some bamboos. They live inside of the woods. And when they were living here, they're not having something like houses.
Right.
So they just live in big buttresses like the Issa and other trees in the forest. Yes.
So you can only find things like this when you get into nature. And we've done that here at the Kakum National Park. And we've had a great guide, William, who's been giving us so much education about the forest.
I did a little research and found that using a chewing stick from the Issa or Miswak tree has some great benefits. Like it kills bacteria, which causes gum disease. It fights plaque better than a traditional toothbrush, which leads to fewer cavities. It freshens the breath. It kills odor-causing bacteria. It whitens teeth naturally and effectively cleans between teeth better than regular toothbrushes. It contains a natural fluoride and also great for those who want to stop smoking. It's very simple and easy to use. First, you peel and chew the bark off about a half an inch from the end of the stick. You chew the stick on the end until the fibers begin to separate and then brush your teeth with the fibrous in, as you would with a regular toothbrush without, of course, the toothpaste. And as the brush end gets dirty and begins to come apart, you just break it off, cut that end off, and start with a fresh tip. This was my first time visiting Kakum National Park on my trip to Ghana, and it was truly refreshing to be in nature and to see this side of Ghana. And Kakum National Park is one of the only surviving rainforests in all of West Africa. So it certainly is a treasure, and one that I hope stays around for a very, very long time to be experienced. Now, the highlight of our trip was our visit to the Torgeme village on the lower course of the Volta River. You're welcomed by the chief, elders, and some of the sweetest children you'll ever meet. We could barely get out of the vehicle before we were surrounded by children, especially our videographer. When we gathered, we were treated to traditional drumming and dancing, and of course, we were asked to join in. The dance looked simple enough, but we did our best, and I'm sure we were humored in the process. And after a bit of dancing, we were presented with traditional African names during our naming ceremony. First, you're given a name that is determined by your gender and the day of the week you were born on. Your second name is given by the village. So my name is Aku for a woman born on Wednesday, and Sika meaning gold. So Aku Sika is my Ghanaian name. And after the ceremony, we presented the village with some everyday medical supplies and some candy for the children that we brought along with us. It really was a special experience. And one of the most special things that happened is that I had bought some fabrics for the women in our group to wrap their heads for the naming ceremony, and some caps for the gentlemen. As we pulled the fabrics out and began wrapping our heads, without provocation and without second thought, the women of the Torgeme village immediately got up and started helping us to tie our scarves. And it was such a sisterhood and such a kinship that it brought me to tears, really, to see it and to see it happen so authentically, so organically, that they were just so impressed that we took it so seriously and that we were so honored to be a part of this. And that is a moment that I will forever remember, and that's an image that I will forever remember, how they immediately jumped up, as I said, without provocation to help us wrap our heads. And we all had these wonderful head wraps in different shapes and sizes. That was just absolutely beautiful. Well, that's a piece of our trip to Ghana that we took in early September. And Ghana holds a special place in my heart. Its landscape is beautiful. Its history is rich. It's also controversial, and parts of it is dark, but the people are the warmest and friendliest you'll ever meet. I don't know if my ancestors left the shores of Ghana, but I know that they left from the shores of West Africa, so there is that kinship there. Yellowstone National Park is America's first national park, so I wanted to know how much America knows about it. This certainly sounds like a case for Mo.
Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I'm here with
Jimmy Burge.
Hey Jimmy, do you know the history of Yellowstone National Park?
Not at all.
Do you know where Yellowstone National Park is located?
No clue.
Do you know any fun facts about Yellowstone National Park?
It's a national park with a geyser.
Well, all right then. Thank you so much for your time. Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I'm here with
DW.
Hey DW, do you know the history of Yellowstone National Park?
No.
Do you know where Yellowstone National Park is located?
In National Stone.
Well, National Stone?
Yeah.
Do you have any fun facts to tell me about Yellowstone National Park?
Don't feed the bears, so boo boo and humbo come out.
Thank you for your time.
Bye.
Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I'm here with
Josh.
Hey Josh, do you know the history of Yellowstone National Park?
I know it's in Montana or Wyoming.
Okay, all right. Can you tell me a fun fact about Yellowstone National Park?
It squirts a lot.
It squirts? Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Well, it seems as if a lot of people have a lot of different ideas about Yellowstone National Park. But we're here for the facts. Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo. Always on the go. Back to you, Javon.
Thank you, Mo. Yellowstone National Park was established in 1872. It's located primarily in Wyoming and extends into parts of Montana and Idaho. It's more than 2 million acres. That makes it larger than Rhode Island and Delaware combined. It's nearly 3,500 miles, and it's one of the largest national parks in the United States. Yellowstone National Park sits on top of a dormant volcano and is home to more geysers and hot springs than any other place on Earth. Approximately 50% of the world's hydrothermal features are at Yellowstone National Park, creating an effect that makes the ground appear to be on fire. The most famous of all geysers is Old Faithful, one of the most popular and recognized natural wonders in the United States. Old Faithful shoots water 100 feet in the air. Its other attractions include Yellowstone Grand Canyon and wildlife. It's the home to America's oldest and largest buffalo herd. Also, there's grizzly bears and wolves. It has over 1,100 species of native plants, more than 200 species of exotic plants, and over 400 species of thermopoles. Not to mention truly unique natural experiences and spectacular hiking trails. And if you're into camping, there are 12 sites available for camping at Yellowstone. Its geology is very unique. It's home to over 10,000 thermal features and more than 300 geysers. It has one of the largest petrified forests. It has over 290 waterfalls with 308-foot lower falls of the Yellowstone River as its showpiece. And Yellowstone Lake is the largest high-altitude lake in North America. You can get more information on Yellowstone National Park at yellowstonenationalpark.com. When I come back, I've got the culture report on Taiwan. I'm Javon Harley, a.k.a. Akusika, for the Traveling Culturati on A2R Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.
What is fly?
Fly would definitely be...